Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope. It's the only show made from 100% post-consumer material. I'm your announcer, Tony Partington. Coming up on this edition of The Scope...
The Scope crew looks back at 2011. Adam contributes despite a conspicuous absence. And something Iowa caucus joke.
And now, here are your hosts, Jared, Adam, and Shane.
Hey, Scope Maniacs.
Look at them. They're just rebellious.
They're in the house.
Restless.
Episode 118
of
the Scope podcasting series.
We're in a brand new year, Shane.
Brand new year. So maybe if this would be like volume 6, episode 1.
We're not quite volume 6 yet. Darn. Our volumes, if you're going by our you know, the birth date of the show, is right around early April. So
early April would be our 6-year anniversary.
Yeah.
We've really been doing this 6 years,
no,
huh?
Yeah, 6 years.
Unbelievable.
No, I think we're in our 5th year, I believe. Year 6 will be, in March, April, whatever.
Well, just like most
and
shows.
And we plateaued in listenership right around year 3.
There we go. That was it. We'll restart it. Just like 80% of the shows, Adam is absent. He is on assignment.
He's a world traveler.
He is.
I'm surprised he does not wear like a fancy red hat and a red rain jacket, like one Carmen Sandiego. And then we could ask, where in the world is Adam?
There's so many parallels between Carmen Sandiego and Adam.
Very much so.
I love it. But Adam is not here, as Jared teased in the intro. He has contributed in his own special way. And that would be an email with information. And we'll...
There was a little Tonyism in there.
Yeah.
Contributes in his own special way.
That's an old callback. But Jared and I will be manning the reins of this Out of Control podcast. I think one of the reasons why Adam is not here is because he did not want to talk about the Scoper Bowl.
Yeah, Scoper Bowl.
Because everyone knows that is the nearly annual battle between Jared and my Minnesota Vikings and Adam's Washington Redskins.
And it really shouldn't be annually, but somehow it's the scheduling gods make it happen.
It does. It's very. I mean, there's no reason why these teams should be playing all the time. And it's interesting because this year, for the record, Vikings tied for the worst season ever in the history of the franchise.
Thank you.
I like it. The Washington Redskins.
Just a little tease of it.
Washington Redskins, they started off pretty strong, didn't they, Jared?
They did.
Weren't they in contention for early?
Yeah, they may have won 4 or 5 in a row.
Yeah,
maybe
they were 5-3.
And Adam was all like, look at my team. Yeah. Your team sucks.
Strutting around like he's cock of the walk. Well, guess what? Reality came crashing down. Didn't the Redskins suffer some key injuries? I'm going to say yeah. Or maybe they
not
just
really.
Maybe they just stink, Jared.
Not really. I mean, they had trouble getting it going. I guess they did. They did lose their starting running back early on, Tim Hightower.
It's a big deal.
And they kind of struggled for a bit trying to figure out what the answer was going to be there. Obviously, they had some quarterback woes. They couldn't figure out who their starter was going to be.
Sounds familiar.
Started as Rex Grossman, then it went to John Beck, and then it went right back to Rex Grossman. Neither one really being a superstar.
No, Rex Grossman has sort of proven himself to be not so great overall. He's had moments, but...
He made it to a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
because you got to give him credit for that.
I will tenuously give him credit. Anyway, so the Redskins roll into town against our Minnesota Vikings. Vikings had won 2 games, and we proceeded to throttle them, right?
I didn't get to see the game.
Oh, okay.
Because I was in another state.
Oh, we'll
and
get to that, too.
My game was not nationally televised.
Yeah, the Vikings turned it around and won the game, which...
Yeah, that's what I hear. I sort of tracked it on my phone as best as I could, and I heard about some of the key injuries.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get into that.
Yeah, there were major injuries in the game. I mean, it was a throwaway game. It didn't mean anything for either team.
Yeah.
Vikings end up losing star running back Adrian Peterson to a massive injury that could... literally change his career trajectory.
Could alter the franchise. It may have an effect on their draft strategy. And I don't know. To me, it was sort of a game where they kind of lost by winning or even playing the game. Because they lost Adrian Peterson, and they also lost their chance to improve their draft pick.
Vikings lose that game. More than likely, they're picking 2nd instead of 3rd, which may not matter.
Depending on who picks what.
But like you said, they won despite the loss and lost despite the win. Hopefully, Adrian Peterson will be back in some capacity next year.
Well, obviously, they're optimistically projecting week one he's available, but we'll see.
I mean, he's a monster. He's dedicated to the game.
He's extremely fit, and I have no doubt that he can be on the field. Week one, I think that's certainly a possibility. People rehabbing ACL injuries like that, the timeline has come down dramatically even in the last few years. But
to paraphrase a cigarette company's slogan, it's come a long way, baby.
Just to continue down this road just for a couple more seconds.
Please. So
I sort of look at like Patriots wide receiver Wes Welker, who blew out his ACL like in the last game a couple years back. And he rehabbed, and his goal was to be back week one, and he was back week one. But he wasn't quite as explosive. He couldn't quite make his cuts. And he has since come back and said that, you know, he wasn't quite 100% that season, and it wasn't until the following season where he really felt like he was back.
And he was kicking some ass.
I think that would be this season, and he's definitely had a good season. So I'm looking at I think there's hope. I don't think he's going to be the player. Adrian Peterson is going to be the player he was in his first season back, but maybe by the next season after that, we'll see.
And maybe by then we'll actually have an offensive line that can create holes for him to run.
Yeah, that's something. He's fortunate in that he picked up a new contract this season and made a lot of money. So
yeah.
Good timing on that.
Good timing. So end of story, Redskins still muddling away in the middle of the pack. And Vikings are terrible, and we'll just have to see what happens next year.
So I guess in the end, I think our takeaway is that, yes, the Redskins were a little bit better than the Vikings this season, as far as record goes. But we still won the Super Bowl, so there.
So suck it, Adam. And he's not even here for us to taunt him, so there you go.
And he will never hear this.
No, he never will. That's just kind of sad. So we haven't done a show since before Christmas. So
it's like December 5th or something like that, I think is my...
Yeah, by my tally, we're looking at almost 5 weeks, so there's a lot to cover. We can talk holidays, and by the way, we're sorry we didn't get to those shows. Just schedules did not work out. And
yeah, we were set up to do a pre-Christmas episode, and then you fell ill.
I got really that was one of my highlights of the holiday season. I was extremely sick.
Wow.
I started getting a cold, and then God, this is a terrible story. So we go to I wasn't feeling great, but we needed to do some Christmas shopping. We were sort of in a hurry to finish off some last-minute things, so we go to the mall.
And you guys do a lot of shopping for a lot of people. Maybe you don't spend a lot on people, but you do a lot of gifts.
Yeah,
certainly much more than I do.
Yeah, there's a lot of little things we have to pick up. And had to go to the Mall of America and wrap up a couple remaining stragglers. And we decided to eat dinner there. And by the way, eating at the Mall of America is... exercise in wasting away precious cash on not very good food.
There are a lot of options, but you've got two food courts on either side if you're not looking at a sit-down restaurant. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, you know, the perimeter is ringed with restaurants, and then everyone sits in the communal cafeteria.
Yeah. And I would
good
say,
luck finding a table.
And I would say, generally speaking, the food prices there are probably 20 to 30% more expensive than if you were to go anywhere else. So if you, the McDonald's there, if it costs you $6 to get a chicken McNugget meal somewhere, it's going to cost you, you know, close to $7 there.
Wow. I had never really done a comparison. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And one other interesting thing at the McDonald's at Mall of America, it serves Pepsi products, not Coke products.
What?
That's contractual.
And that's a Mall of America thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow. They do serve Coke in some places. They just not that for whatever reason. Hmm. Not that
You would
McDonald's.
Think that someone with the power of McDonald's would be able to get around that.
You would think, but it's probably written into the leasing agreement.
They probably
there.
Weighed the pros and cons, and it's better to be in that location than it is to sell Coke.
Yes. So we're in the food court, and my wife has a very unhealthy, unnatural affinity for the Long John Silver's chicken planks.
Chicken planks.
She doesn't even like the fish there. She likes the chicken planks.
I imagine the preparation is very similar to the fish.
Yeah,
so
probably tastes almost exactly the same. And
does she get the hush puppies come with that?
I think there is a hush puppy that will come with that as well.
Interesting.
So
I had hush puppies in Florida, by the way. Go ahead.
Delicious. Well, and Carrie got that. Audrey is, my daughter, is very picky, so a lot of times she'll just get the corn dog nuggets that are right next door at the A&W, the root beer factory.
Oh, sure.
And it's just, you know, to buy food there, it's a pain in the ass because all the places are spread out, and I just sort of accepted that I was going to have to eat at one of those places. And I decided incorrectly that I was going to eat at Long John Silver's, but they're really expensive there. Even more expensive, because fish tends to be more expensive.
Sure.
So I end up getting the deal of the day at Long John Silver's.
Uh-oh.
It was their
sounds like tragedy
it
already.
It was their fried popcorn shrimp.
Ooh.
Which, you know, it is what it is. But essentially, that shrimp is kind of, it's sort of the size of mini shrimp that you get in a can. You know, those really small ones you might find in casseroles or like a some sort of cold dip, something like that.
Which, I'm familiar with the concept.
Which is gross, by the way. They're gross. It's not
I'm not
it's
a
not
big
great.
Shrimp guy. So.
Yeah, I like shrimp, but this, I think, was the first time I ever had shrimp at Long John Silver, and it will be the last time that I ever had shrimp there.
You learned your lesson.
We got it. I mean, it was fresh-ish, it seemed. It was hot. But as I'm eating it, it just did not, you know, everything was that golden brown hue, and it just was, I knew it when I was eating it, it just was a mistake.
Uh-oh. But you were hungry.
I was hungry, shopping. I had stuff to do.
There was still more shopping to come, and you needed fuel.
Got it done, and got home, that was fine, woke up middle of the night, or maybe 2, 3, and I was sick to my stomach. I had the worst pain in my I've ever had from being
sick. It
was like
the shrimp had come back to life and were trying to break their way out of your body.
You know, I'm pretty confident it was food poisoning. And I ended up staying home from work that day, literally not being able to get off the couch except to go to the bathroom.
Which was frequent, I'm guessing.
Yes, and disgusting.
Are you someone who is generally susceptible to food poisoning?
Sometimes. Yeah. Maybe a little bit more than others, but in this case, it hit me hard, and I was out of commission for 24 hours. And then as I started to shake it the next day, then my cold kicked into high gear. So I essentially, and that was the day that we were supposed to do the Scope show, and I was kind of out of commission that weekend and then early into that week for almost a good 5-6 days.
Wow.
Where I just was not feeling well, and I even had to miss some work. So that hammered the Christmas episode of the Scope, which is a bummer. And then
we had all these wonderful gift-giving ideas for you, Scope listeners, and sorry we ruined your holidays.
We did. And then Jared went on his Christmas vacation.
I did.
Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
My girlfriend, her family, or by family, I mean her mother and stepfather, they have a vacation home in Florida, and they typically go there every year for Christmas, and several other times throughout the year, too, but specifically at Christmas, and often her sister will come in from Omaha as well. And we've been thinking about going the last few years, and I just couldn't make it work financially. This year, we got an offer from her sister to help subsidize our airfare using her wealth of Delta Sky Miles.
There you go.
And so it reduced our airfare costs, and so we said, we're going. We got it done. I got the vacation time, and so I spent my first Christmas in Florida. Hopefully not my last.
And, you know, you are a Minnesota boy, pretty much, from head to toe.
Yep.
You've never spent a warm holiday.
Never been to Florida.
Never had a warm Christmas.
And we were about an hour outside of Orlando, so there were things to do. And it was, I gotta tell you, it was nice to be warm. Apparently we had a spat of unseasonably warm weather.
Yeah, it was about 40. Orlando. Here it was 40, 45.
I hear it was nice here, so there is a sadness that we didn't miss, you know, like, you know, 20 below or something like that. But, no, it was upper 70s, low 80s the entire time we were in Florida, which is apparently, in contrast to the previous year where it was probably 60s and people were calling it freezing.
Oh, my goodness.
I still would have enjoyed it.
60s would have been great.
But it was nice, you know, we could eat outside every meal if we wanted to, and
go to the beach.
Nice. I can run down what we did. So we were staying at their vacation home, so, you know, room and board is essentially free.
What'd you do for meals?
For meals, there were a lot of meals cooked in house. Actually, I was led to believe that we ate out a lot, but that didn't happen. The second day we were there, after we had arrived, we went shopping at the outlet mall. There's several outlet malls there. We went to a big outlet mall there, and all the kids, including myself, got big cash bonuses to go spend there. So
my guess is that all they had was like cast off Disney Disney stuff, like Mickey Mouse ears that are sort of crooked or maybe they one ear bigger than the other.
All the major brands you know, have their Hollister.
Jerbo, there, so. Do they have Jerbo jeans?
I did not see Jerbo. I could consult the map, but it wasn't on my punch
list. Hypercolor? Do they have any Hypercolor t-shirts?
Sadly, no. No. I only ended up getting a polo.
That's the 80s outlet mall, by the way.
I only ended up getting a polo shirt from Ralph Lauren and then pocketing the rest of the cash, but that's all right. But so,
I can't wait for you to sample that, put that shirt on and model it for us sometime.
So anyway, that night was really the only night that we ate out, and we went to a local seafood restaurant or fish restaurant. I don't know what you want to call it. I think it was called Pier 16, but it was definitely not a chain, and it's a place that they've gone to an awful lot in the past. And this was a...
Popcorn shrimp special?
I think they had popcorn shrimp, yes, but they had a lot of other, like, fish.
Yeah.
And they do their, you know, the typical... they have several different preparation methods, but the preferred one is the battered and fried.
Oh, delicious.
And it's not a heavy batter. It's not, like, you know, super crisp or anything. It's a real light batter.
Like a tempura?
No, I wouldn't say call it tempura, but it was just very. I don't. She explained it, and I don't remember what it was, but it was very good. And then the entire process was: you sit down, and immediately they present you a basket of corn fritters.
Mm, delicious!
Right there on the table while you're deciding on your drinks and your meal choice.
Corn fritters. Would you consider yourself a fritter kind of fellow?
Tasty as hell.
All right, tasty as hell. Calm down.
And so you order up your fish. I was recommended the white fish, and that's what I got. I got the white fish.
I don't know if I've ever seen you eat fish before.
Oh, yeah, I eat fish all the time.
All right, calm down, Admiral. Get...
yeah, of seafood, fish is really the only thing
good.
I like.
A delicious white fish is one of my favorites.
It was very good. It wasn't too fishy. It was just very, very fresh. You know, as you're close to the ocean, I'm sure it was fresh and it was delicious. And yeah. It was good.
Did you put malt vinegar on it?
I'm not a malt vinegar guy.
I love malt vinegar.
I'm just not
kind
a vinegar
of starving
guy.
Now.
So that's my fish story. But that was really the only time we ate out. Otherwise, we had meals. The day after that was when we went to the Disney parks.
Oh,
apparently,
yeah.
It's called Disney parks now. I did not realize that. But
because there's multiple of them.
Yeah, there is. So we just went, we had some complimentary day hopper passes.
What does that mean exactly?
Park hopper passes. They had these, apparently, these old passes from the girls' youth. The last time they had been used was, I believe, 1996.
Really?
And but they were still valid.
Do they have to punch them rather than scan them?
Well, that was the thing. They were these old cards, and they had like the old like stamp date.
Yeah.
You know, where you have the thing where you dial in the date
sure,
and you
sure.
punch it down. So they had two of those on there, and we parked at Epcot, and then we were going to take the monorail to Magic Kingdom. So we're in line at Epcot, ready to go in, and I'm kind of looking around, and I'm noticing everyone's got, like, cards with mag strips.
Yeah, they're scanning or sliding.
And I'm like, maybe we should go to the ticket office first.
Very smart.
So we went to the ticket office, and some older gentleman named Virgil, I think that was his name. He helped us out. He gave us upgraded our passes, so we got the mag strip passes. I had masquerade as Angie's stepfather because these are supposedly non-transferable. The old ones had no names on them. He made us write names on the new ones. So
interesting.
So I am someone else.
Nice.
Anyway, so we got mag strips. We got in. Blah blah blah. So yeah, I got to finally go to one of the big theme parks that I've never ever been to one since I don't travel much. So it was kind of exciting.
Was it busy?
It was pretty busy, and it wasn't. It got more busy as the day went on, but our strategy was to get to the Magic Kingdom first, and we got there probably about 11, and take care of that, because that was just going to get progressively more busy as the day
went
on.
So what type of things are in the Magic Kingdom? Are those major rides in there?
Yeah, I mean, this is your Disney, your Disney World proper,
gotcha,
as it were. So you've got your Main Street USA, you've got Cinderella's Castle, took a bunch of pictures here and there. You've got Tomorrowland, where they've got Space Mountain.
Oh, I like that.
Space Mountain is the good one. You've got Frontierland, which has like the big Rocky Mountain roller coaster, or whatever, Splash Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, I think it's called Adventureland, which that's where your Pirates of the Caribbean and your safari rides, whatever. And the one we didn't really go through was Fantasyland, and that's more your Disney character proper. It's a Small World is in there. It seems to be a little bit geared to the younger set. So
that's where my daughter would want to go.
Right, and it's much more pink. We didn't quite make it through there because we were sort of running out of time and we wanted to get over to Epcot. So we didn't hit a lot. I mean, I was kind of surprised the park isn't as big as you would think. You know, I always had this idea that it was just this big, massive place,
yeah.
But honestly, it doesn't take that long to walk from one side to the other.
Like a Valley Fair type?
Yeah, it's probably just a little... No, it's bigger than Valley Fair, definitely, but it, I don't know, it just felt smaller than I had expected.
Sure.
So we managed to get on, we went on Pirates of the Caribbean, which was fun.
How long do you have to wait to get on a ride?
That was only 15 minutes. That wasn't too bad. And are you familiar with the Fast Pass system?
I am, but I know what it is, but I don't know how it works.
You basically, you go to a ride, and if they're issuing Fast Passes, you go to the Fast Pass station, you put in your Magstrip card pass thingy.
Okay.
It pops out a ticket, and it tells you like an hour block to come back to get in and get to the Fast Pass line. But you can only have like one at a time, or it's like, you know, 4 or 5 hours until you can grab another one, or okay, something like that. So actually our first thing we did is we went to Tomorrowland. We grabbed a Fast Pass for Space Mountain, because that's going to be one of the big draws. So we had a couple hours there, wait to come back for that. So then at that point, then we started making our circuit around the park. And we went to Pirates of the Caribbean, which was only 15 minutes. And I had found an app, an app for my phone. It wasn't like an official Disney app, but it was an app that proved very, very valuable, because it actually would give you near real-time data on attraction wait times.
Oh, you know? Cool.
And so I was able to pull that up and go, okay, well, this is that long. Let's go there. You know, so yeah, so we went Pirates of the Caribbean, which was fun.
Based on the movie, or is it? Old?
I mean, it's still old school from what I know, but they've added the Captain Jack Sparrow. He shows up like 3 times.
Gotcha. So, and that, is it actually Johnny Depp, or is it?
It looks just like the character from the movie. My understanding is that he's subsequently been added since the movie.
Okay,
you know,
gotcha.
It wasn't part of the original attraction.
Sure.
We went to that, and we were gonna go to Splash Mountain, but it was already over an hour long wait. So we went to the big Rocky Mountain Railroad. I can never get the name right. This was a ride that I had seen, you know, in the brochures and stuff like that when I was younger, and we had always been dreaming of going on a vacation to Disney World. I'm like, I want to go on that. So this was a ride that was important for me to hit. And at the time we got in line, it was a 40-minute wait. So I'm like, well, whatever, you know, we'll just wait it out.
This is a dream maker for you.
I didn't think it was going to be the greatest ride, but it was sort of one of those things like, you know, I should go on this.
Sure.
So. And 40 minutes wasn't a terrible wait. So it turned out to be probably about an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, boy.
It was, number one, it was going much more slowly than advertised initially. And then at some point when we got close to the front, they started saying that they were having a delay in their boarding procedure, whatever the hell that means.
Like, you'd think they'd have that figured out.
I don't know what that means, but whatever it was, it started slowing things down even more. So we eventually get on this thing, and, you know, it's fun. None of the roller coasters at Magic Kingdom have, like, any significant drops.
No, it's not scary.
They're pretty tame.
Disney doesn't get into, like, loop-de-loops and crap like that. They're, you know, it's all pretty PG.
Yeah.
If you want to classify it that way.
So we finally get off of that. And at this point, it's time to start making our way over to Tomorrowland again so we can get on Space Mountain, because our Fast Pass window is coming up, Shane.
So they give you a window of time to be there? Is that how it is?
You come back and it changes as, you know, as they distribute, that starts creeping forward and forward. So our block was like 2:05 to 3:05. So we're there like 2:05 on the dot.
And do they just go right to the front?
There's the regular line, and then there's the Fast Pass line. And you just... go in the Fast Pass line, and you know.
Is the Fast Pass line ever super crowded too?
It could be. I mean, depending on how many Fast Passes they.
And do those people automatically get to go on before the people that are waiting in line, or do they have like 1/3 regular, 2/3 Fast Pass when they're.
They sort of start at the front of the line, they sort of start mixing them.
Okay.
You know. But it was probably 5 minutes and we were on the ride.
Nice.
It was pretty awesome. And Space Mountain was definitely my favorite part of the day. The configuration of the trains, there's two cars, and there's like pairs of them linked together, and they each have three, and you're sitting, you know, front to back. You're not sitting side by side at all. I got sat in the front seat of the front car.
Oh, look at you.
And I'm like, there's nothing between me and space, bitches. I'm going to space. And it's pretty cool, because you get on it, and if you've never experienced before, one of the first things you go through is like a long tunnel, and it's got these lights that stream at you like you're launching into space. And after that, it's mostly darkness.
Really?
It's dark, and they have sound effects and occasional flashes of light, but it's a lot of... There isn't a lot of drops, but it's a lot of speed and changes of direction.
So does it hurt your neck when you're zipping around?
It's not too bad. You kind of tense up and, you know.
Sure.
But it was pretty cool. Even Angie was definitely kind of scared to go on it initially. And when she got done, she was like, you know, that wasn't too bad.
Toughen
that was
up,
kind of
right?
fun. She liked it, actually. So
excellent.
Cool. kudos to her.
She braved it out.
Yeah. And so after that, we did a couple more things. We had to hit the Haunted Mansion, which was
spooky,
fun.
Spooky
which was fun. We got the ghost that made our heads disappear. Apparently, you go through the whole thing, and then at the end of the ride, the cars kind of rotate, and they all rotate so that they're all kind of side by side, and you're looking at a mirror, and they do some sort of projection wizardry, so each car has a different ghost that shows up, and ours was on top of our car, and it like shined a light across us, and it made our heads disappear.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
That looks like you've recovered.
Yes, you did just fine. I remember her sister, who was riding alone, had a ghost in the car with her who had like a big beard and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Really?
Oh, it put a beard on her. That's what it did.
That was a mischievous ghost.
It's pretty nifty. It's a pretty nifty effect. Yeah. So we went through that, and we were going to hit It's a Small World just because it's one of those classics, but the line was too long, and we wanted to get over to Epcot. And this is where things started to fall apart.
Uh-oh. I didn't know that was the case.
And I'm sorry for going into so much detail. The rest of the trip will be certainly not as exciting. We're trying to get out, and unfortunately, the parade has now started.
Oh, boy.
And so the parade kind of winds its way through the main thoroughfares, and it's really, really hard because they have a lot of crossings and stuff blocked off, so it's like you only have certain places you can walk.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of made the wrong decision. We tried to think, we're going to go to the right, which will get us then behind the end of the parade, and we'll be able to cross over and get where we needed to. Well, 3 million other people have the same idea. So
you're not as smart as you think.
We finally get to the point where the parade has passed, and now people are allowed to cross the road, and it's just gridlock.
Bedlam.
Ugh. We finally get across there, and we're trying to... The real decision would have been to go to the left to get ahead of the parade, because we could go faster than the parade.
Sure.
Anyway, we finally work our way around, and we get to the point. But the problem is the parade is moving to the point where it's heading towards the main entrance area where we're going, and there's just no way to get around.
You're not
going to
win this battle.
So what they do is you get up to a point where you're kind of at a spot where there's no other way to get out. You have to cross the street, and they have it blocked. But what they do is they'll be periodically, the parade will stop, and then they will open up the street, and the little attendants will say, all right, come on, cross. So you just kind of had to wait.
Boy, very thorough, this Disney place, though.
Yeah. They got it worked out. They know what they're doing. So anyway, so we then, long story short, then we make it over to Epcot, and we're going to do a bunch of stuff there. We go through, the big ball, Spaceship Earth, and Epcot is definitely not as... interesting from a ride perspective, but there's it's interesting.
It was, it was probably cool in the early 80s. Really cool in
the
early 80s.
The big attraction there is a motion ride called Soarin' now. It's pretty new. Our plan had been to get over to Epcot, grab a fast pass for that immediately, and come back later. But by the time we got there, they had already stopped distributing fast passes for the day.
Oh.
And this was probably 3:30 p.m. We had a lot of day left, and Epcot closes at 9:30. They were done distributing fast passes, and the wait was 3 hours.
Oh, that would not be fun.
No soaring for us.
I would never want to wait. I would never get in a line for 3 hours for anything. I think it'd be just angry. I want to punch Goofy right in the junk.
Yeah. So we ended up, we grabbed a fast pass for this thing called Mission Space, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's a kind of a motion simulator, and it's supposed to simulate you launching into space and going to Mars. So we grabbed our pass for that, and then we started making the circuit around the world as they have at Epcot.
And you had to see, the ride was 1 year long, because it was like real time.
No, not too bad. So we just started making the circuit around the countries, and at this point, it's cool, because as an adult, you can purchase beer now.
Yeah.
And so we started, this is where we did most of our hanging out. We were there at Epcot till close. We saw the fireworks and everything like that, and we went on Mission Space, and got a little bit queasy, but not too bad, because it really simulates the G-force.
Sure.
It's pretty intense. The guy should have told us it was only like 4.5 minutes long, though, when that helped.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
One thing I've seen, and I'm sorry that it was turned into a Disney show, but it's interesting to me.
Well, it's interesting to me, too, because I've never been in.
They sort of have the tour of the world, right?
Yeah.
And it's true, you can buy like authentic food.
Yep.
Is it... Did you see some of that stuff? Was it interesting to you? Or
yeah.
Did you try any of it? And how expensive is the food? That's what I want to know.
I mean, the food isn't... It's not terrible. I mean, it's...
What does a hamburger cost you at Disneyland?
I actually could not find a hamburger at Disneyland.
A soda pop. $3?
Soda pop's probably, $3.
Is it a Coke or a Pepsi park?
I think it's Coke, because we got a Powerade and a Sprite. Yeah, it was definitely Coke.
Okay.
But yeah, no, Epcot is I think they do a really good job at the trying to simulate the authenticity of the countries. All the workers in each country, they spoke with accents that
fluent
that seemed authentic, and they I don't know if they're trained well or if they're actually from those countries or what, but they do a good job at the at creating the atmosphere. So
cool
points to them, and the architecture is pretty cool. Yeah, the one weird thing I noticed, and maybe other Epcot fans can back me up on this. The walkways, when it gets dark, are really, really, they're not well lit. It's very strange. It's like each country's area is decently lit, but then the walking area between them, very low light.
Dark
and
scary.
I thought that was kind of strange.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it wasn't, you know, you could still get around, but it felt like there could be a lot more light.
Gotcha. Disney thuggery.
Yeah.
Happens if you aren't careful.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's Disney in a nutshell, I guess, or in a, you know, more than a few nutshells.
So the question is, you'd like to go back? Are you going back next year? Is this going to be an every other year kind of thing, or how's it going
to
work?
You know, I don't know if I want to go back every year. I'm still too close to it to know for sure, but maybe come October, I'll be like, yeah, I'd like to go back. It'd be awesome warm, but you know, I the other highlight obviously was I finally got to go on Friday. We went to the beach, the Atlantic coast. So I finally got to go to an ocean-facing beach, and we kind of just waded into the ocean briefly. It was too cold to really do any swimming. But,
sure.
Yeah, so I can cross that off my list. I've been to an ocean.
Congratulations. That's the first time you've ever been to an ocean.
Yeah, first time.
Wow.
First time. I was surprised at how fine the sand was and how, like, with the tide out, the sand that's below it, how firm it is.
Yeah.
It's, like, really, really hard. That kind of surprised me.
It's a lot different than our lake sand.
Lake beach, yeah.
Or the North Shore, where you're walking on rocks, literally walking on rocks.
Yeah.
So was your mom sad that you were not around for the holidays, or did she not care?
Probably a little bit. I'll find out more in a week or so when we celebrate her birthday. So
she yells
she'll probably
at you.
Give me the whole, you know.
We missed you.
The guilt trip.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Fight it, Jared. Don't be guilted. So that leads us to, if you're done talking about your vacation.
I think, the rest of it is details that aren't interesting to a podcast audience,
okay,
probably.
We'll take it offline.
Sorry about that. We're almost 32 minutes in.
Yeah. And then we, let's skip to New Year's. We were going to do a New Year's Scope show, but for whatever reason, that did not pan out.
Yeah, that was more me not having time to get the basement ready, and it was going to be a smaller party anyway, so I elected to put all my efforts into preparing the upstairs part of the home, and we did our traditional rock banding upstairs.
But then we added Dance Central
Dance
to the mix for the
Central.
First time. It's the first time I own that, and the first time I've played it as a group, and we had a lot of fun doing that. I was surprised how everyone sort of took to it. And
I think the big surprise of the evening was how well a certain Scope guest, Earl, took to it.
3'2" Earl. No, Earl's you know, a smaller fellow, but he really did quite well. I was shocked. And he really did well dancing to the older songs. So if it was 70s or 80s.
He has an affinity for those moves.
Yeah. So if you throw out a Justin Bieber song, then he's not so hot. But
Pitbull, not his thing.
No.
But,
Earl loved Dance Central too. I was shocked.
I think I still maintain it's because he's more compact and he fits within the viewport of the Kinect much easier.
You just cannot give the guy any credit.
It registers his moves. I don't know.
It was a good time. We did that. We sang a few songs. We had some drinks, had some food.
It was
a small group.
I got to pick a bone with you on one of the songs, though.
What happened?
That goddamn Starship We Built This City.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was in my head and Angie's head for probably 3 or 4 days afterward. I'd wake up and it'd be like, and remember, we built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. And I'm just like, going!
That song in Rock Band is a really complicated song. They've got a lot of harmonies, a lot of difficult guitar parts and keyboard stuff, and it's still not a good... If you see the lyrics, it is asinine.
It's amazing that was as big a hit as it was.
Yeah, it was gigantic.
But it definitely gets in your head, and I could not get rid of it.
Wow. Well, I would like to say never again with We Built the City, but
I'm sure it will come
up. You can't guarantee anything.
Yeah.
So it was a good party overall. The weather got a little grouchy. Right now, if you look outside here in Minneapolis, there is traces of snow, maybe. This is
very little.
I mean, it was 40 degrees on New Year's Eve. I mean, it was warm, and then it cooled down, and we got some sleet and a little bit of snow.
And then it warmed up again, so the snow melted, and then it froze.
Yeah, it was,
that was the pain.
It was very moon-like out there.
I have a ridge on my driveway right by the door that is from snow that had fallen on Andrew's car that was parked there, melted and fallen off the car into the driveway and then refroze.
So
I had this bump right outside of my garage door.
Just for a little perspective, last year, the winter from hell, at this time last year, we had about 60 inches of snow, which is more than we normally get all year. And this year, I think maybe we've gotten 8 inches of snow. Yeah. And there's nothing there. It fell and melted. I don't know if we've ever had any more than maybe 3 inches of snow on the ground at all.
I haven't even turned on the snowblower.
This is a year, a winter that has forgotten Minnesota, and I guess a lot of places across the country. We're going in our traditionally coldest weeks of the year, and we could avoid most of that, although I hear it's going to get colder.
Yeah,
it's a little disconcerting,
some teens coming for a couple days, but then it goes back up into the 20s and 30s.
So is it a little disconcerting, though, Jared, that the weather is doing what it's doing? I mean, I find it bizarre and strange, and I almost want to have snow just because I'm worried about what it's going to do to the crops and the ground when we need the water.
There's certainly... I don't mind the weather at all.
No.
But you got to kind of wonder, is this normal? Is this the new norm? What's going on? What is causing this? You know, I'm sure a little bit of research would come back with the answer. Is this within meteorological norms for this region?
Maybe once every 60 years.
It probably is, but, you know, it's a little strange. I feel a little bad for like the lawn care guys who plow snow in the winters to make ends meet. They don't have any business.
City budgets are loving it because they're not plowing and they're not having
That was an issue last year when city budgets were running out of money, and it was very apparent that roads were not being cleared to normal standards.
No.
Or I mean, even Richfield, it felt like it had to snow 6 inches for them to even bother to plow.
Oh boy. Yes.
at least the side streets. The main street still got the attention, but my street, it was like if it was a few inches, forget seeing a plow.
Different world.
It's just gonna build up and
well, we'll see how the rest of it goes. Yeah, it's just been a strange year. And
I don't mind the heating bills I'll see.
No, that's for sure. Cheaper.
Be a lot cheaper, yeah.
No, hopefully we'll get enough that, I think it'll get a little... I mean, we're considered to be in a drought right now, so hopefully that will straighten out.
Yeah, I got to wonder how this helps our economy, though, from the perspective of those who would normally have to pay, you know, pretty high heating bills in the winter, and getting sort of a bit of a reprieve from that with the temperatures. Does that then money go back into our economy in other ways? Maybe.
I don't know.
Consumer spending? Who knows?
Boy, that could be a whole other podcast, couldn't it?
Yeah.
So that leads us to now. We are past the year 2011, and we thought it would be appropriate to look back, and so that's what we're going to do. A little bit late, but that's the way it goes. A lot of these websites and TV places, they'll look back in 2011. They'll look back at but we don't do
that. Early December, they're already looking back.
We're looking back when we should be looking back, in 2012.
Right.
So that's...
with the proper perspective,
exactly.
One might say.
I wish Adam was here to do this, but Jared and I will soldier on. And I will also bring you a bridged version of the Scope. Favorite Under the Scope.
We're a little top-heavy, so I don't think they'll mind when we lose a little bit on the back end.
So, Jared, let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
And then let's push this episode 118 to greater heights right after this.
This is the Fump.
And all the elves say,
it's fun to fly with the fat guy.
Hello, I'm the Doctor. Just the Doctor, and this is my crew. How do you do? I'm just a madman with a box. Big blue box, foxy and sexy, if you only knew. Yes, it's bigger on the inside. Ask him to
say, it was haunted by a ghost. The ghost of Billy Mays. He's always shouting.
Tonica, it's Star Wars Hanukkah. You can hang out with Qui-Gonica on the Millennium Falconica with a Wookiee.
Corn, beef, and cabbage. Corn, beef, and cabbage.
Hot, hot, in the pot. Hot, hot, in the pot. Hot, hot.
That's the Funny Music Project at thefump.com. THEFUMP.com. Funny.
And we are back. The Scope, episode 118. is prepare. Yes, I got that correct. Thank you. We are preparing ourselves for a grand look back at the year that was 2011. A lot of stuff happened in 2011.
Well, there are when I was doing my research, 365 days worth of opportunities.
Some might say more than enough happened in 2011. We've, we'll cover all the pop culture stuff, the best songs, movies, TV, video games. But we might as well look at some of the actual events that happened as well. And just by my tally, Jared, I've got about 10 or so little things here.
Wow.
I'm just going to throw out some stuff, and you want to comment, please do.
All right, you go for it.
So one of the major things that happened that hopefully you have not forgotten is the big Japan earthquake / tsunami.
Yeah.
And I mean, sometimes that stuff seems like it was so long ago, but it was...
Hasn't even been a year.
No, hasn't been a year. And the stats are pretty insane. About, 16,000 dead, another 5,000 people still missing. Bodies probably never will be found, or
washed out to sea,
or they'll wash up. I just saw an article last week or the week before that a debris from Japan is now starting to show up on the West Coast.
Wow!
So they're seeing lumber and buoys and stuff like that. So they said it's actually possible that a lot of stuff there that might be a little freaky, like people, might be showing up as well. Just the way it goes. Along with that, you've got with the tsunami, you have the nuclear. The nuclear issue in Japan, where
Fukushima, Fukushima, yeah, that's it.
Where
I was glued to that. That was my if there was one particular event that came from that whole scenario, that was the reactor at Fukushima.
Yeah, and I mean, you still every once in a while new footage of some of that the water surges pop up, and it is just unbelievable. You see that stuff, and obviously. We've had other tsunamis. The other tsunami in Phuket a few years back, but not as much video footage of that. You think about Japan, where everybody has a camera, and it's
you're talking the big one, the Indonesian one.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah,
it was like 100,000 died or whatever.
Yes.
Right.
But I mean, it was
more tragic.
More tragic, but not as covered, just because it's a poorer area.
Yeah.
In Japan, everybody's got cell phone cameras and cameras everywhere,
and there's
so
a
you
shock
just see
that
it.
This is happening in a nation that is supposedly prepared for this sort of stuff, and obviously they weren't prepared enough.
No,
for the magnitude of what happened.
Yeah, it really was unbelievable to see that stuff, and it even today when I look back at it and I see it's just quiet to me. It's a shocking thing.
I recently watched a video. I don't remember the source or whatever, but it followed like two or three specific stories of survivors, and they kind of told their story, and obviously it was translated for English, but they also intercut footage that they had of these people, usually from a distance, but going through it like a daughter and her mother who had just barely gotten to the top of a building and were actually overrun by water from the tsunami that survived. Some guy who escaped onto a bridge, and it was just insane how just the narrowest of margins some people escaped.
I mean, there are stories and also video of people running for their, seeing the water, running for their lives. Yeah. Some people make it, some people don't. There was just, I just saw some footage that popped up where it was a guy, they were on city streets next to the barriers, and the water's pouring over, and they're just sitting in their cars. I mean, and you can just see it's going up. That barrier is probably 20 feet tall, and the water's pouring over it, and eventually all that stuff's going to balance out, where, you're probably going to have 15, 20 feet of water, where there was no water before. And, I guess Japan pretty well accustomed to tsunamis.
Sure. So I mean, they have a warning system in place.
So I'm assuming that, many people got out of the way once they heard the warnings, but... Which was not the case in the Indonesian tsunami. They didn't have anything built in like that. But just imagine,
they don't have sea walls that are designed. I mean,
people.
Not that the sea
walls
were effective.
20 minutes to get away in Japan. Yeah. Oftentimes, at least the warning was there. But imagine that there's still 20,000 people dead or gone is humbling. Absolutely humbling. What else we got here? I have the Arizona shooting of Representative Gifford.
Wow.
And remember that happened where she is, beat the odds, what a terrible gunshot.
Who gets shot in the head and lives and managed to come back and have You know, I mean, she's gonna still gonna have issues, but yeah. You know, she seems like she's on the path to recovering as well as she can.
Yeah, I don't know if she'll ever be, you know, back doing what she did before. No. But the fact that, you know, she's moving is amazing. And there, we can't forget that there were six other people that died because of that, for that crazy son of a bitch who, you know, you don't often see crazy in the real world, but you looked in that guy's eyes and you kind of felt like there it was. Lighter news, we have the royal wedding of Prince William and Catherine Middleton.
I was glued.
People are not infatuated with the British royalty. I don't get it myself, but there's a lot of people that love that stuff.
Yeah, they do. Part of it's the media that blows it up and then people follow along, but yeah, I don't know. It's romantic and it's, you know, it's not something we have here. We don't have a monarchy, so it's sort of kind of novel from that respect, but whatever.
Yeah, it's a strange thing because they have power, but they don't really have power.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I'd love to have one of our British listeners, because we've got a few of them, wink wink.
Yeah.
Let us know.
We have really, one that's a converted Vikings fan.
Which we've utterly crushed his love of sports, I think, because of our...
Sorry about that.
Yeah. but, you know, it was happy. At least that was happy news. And Prince William seems like a decent chap, as they would say, over there across the pond.
Yeah, he's got his father's looks, though.
He does, yeah.
Poor fella. Good thing he's a prince.
Yeah. He's got a little bit of his mom in his face and his father on his head, which is a very... I mean, with that kind of money, man, I would be getting hair implants left and right. I'd look like frickin' MacGyver after I was done.
You didn't need it. You got a Kate Middleton. Not a bad score.
No, not at all. We've got the Arab Spring, Jared, and that's not a new deodorant flavor.
It's not
the scent. It is. It's the downfall of
it. Doesn't smell
Libya.
Like falafel and tabbouleh.
Egypt. We got Syria on the outs. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, Jared.
It's impressive. Egypt hasn't gone as smoothly as they would have hoped.
No. And we've got, you know, Iraq, which is now going in the crapper now that America's gone.
I think we all expected that, though, didn't we?
That, you know, to paraphrase what Howard Stern was talking about, you know, I just wish that it wasn't our problem, because that's sort of our problem, you know?
It's like, yeah, what do you do?
I don't wish that Saddam Hussein was back.
No.
But I wish that it wasn't, you know, directly attributed to the American move in there.
Yeah.
That's sort of a bummer.
Yeah.
And that's an ongoing story, Jared. That's going to be as big a story in 2012 as it will be in 2011.
It's going to reshape things there for decades to come.
Yep. And I've also got Occupy Wall Street written down as kind of a counterpoint to the Tea Party movement.
Yep.
I'm not going to get too political, but I just have to say, for all the people that don't understand what Occupy Wall Street was about, I'm so on the other side of that. Like, I get what it's about. I just don't feel like it's a bunch of hooligans. I mean,
no.
I feel like the message is pretty strong and
I
clear.
Think, well, number one, the media no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, the media has done a poor job, or at least initially did a poor job of covering it. In the fact that, number one, they didn't cover it. They largely ignored it. And then number two,
Jared, that's not true. I mean, there is such a liberal bias that I'm sure that it was covered left and right.
And number two, they didn't do a good job of trying to explain what it was, because they so badly want to come up and say, you know, it's this one thing with this one message. And that's not what it is. I mean, it's a lot of different angles, a lot of different... There's no real demands other than, you know, there's great inequality that needs some sort of... Something needs to happen.
And
something needs to change.
That inequality does not mean, I think... This is what I take from it. It doesn't mean that you should redistribute wealth.
No.
I think it means that corporations should be held to the same standards that you and I are held to when it comes to paying your bills or obeying the laws of the land. And they should have the same types of laws that we have to face, which it clearly does not seem that that's the case. How many major people from the banking system have gone to jail over the housing crisis, or... I don't think anybody has. Maybe
I'm sure some have.
A couple people, but there's no big. There's no sacrificial lambs.
The banking industry is. It's kind of ridiculous how they directly cause our financial collapse in this country, and they came out of it with no problem at all. And they're still now. They're just making record profits again. Salaries are way up again. Bonuses are way up. It's like.
Is there justice in that?
Is there justice? Who's going to call their bluff? Or who's going to say enough is enough? Nobody.
No. Nope.
I mean...
The politicians that are in their pockets?
It's sad. And this is why Occupy Wall Street happened.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Nobody learned from what happened, and it's back to business as usual with no oversight. And it's just a matter of time before something else happens.
And if you want to have oversight, then some people will try to block it. Because they have, because that those groups have too much power.
It's true.
Yeah.
What else you got on your
list? Okay, so I've got I've made special note of Osama bin Laden and Muammar Gaddafi being removed from planet Earth.
Bad year for dictators and bad guys.
To say that at least for the U.S. government, we've taken a couple of major players and a couple other guys. Which I'm not going to name names because I don't remember them, but a couple other major terrorist type guys were.
Yeah. Kim Jong-il went of his own accord.
Yeah. Which that's a story in progress.
Yeah.
But,
we'll see how Kim Jong-un does with his newfound power.
But. Yeah, we'll have to see. But Osama's gone. Muammar Gaddafi, who has sort of been an on-again, off-again bad guy.
Yeah.
More towards the end of his reign, bad, and he is now removed from this planet. So I think that Americans can feel safer about that or feel better about it. We'll see. But, you know, out of chaos... Or out of this comes chaos, and we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
I've got a list here of people we've lost. I've got names like Liz Taylor, Amy Winehouse.
I feel like I need a montage of black and white photos and sad music.
I know. Clarence Clemons of the E Street Band, yeah. Betty Ford, Joe Frazier, and a couple other ones here.
Patrice O'Neill.
I've got Steve Jobs and the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have to say that. And I don't know how you feel about this, but that like the loss of Steve Jobs and some of these other people that maybe have been around through our lives really affected me this year more than other years. And I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older and, you know, you sort of start to feel your age and you feel, I don't know, you feel mortality around you a little bit. But, you know, Steve Jobs was relatively young. And here's a guy that has had an impact on my life.
Yeah.
You know, since I was in grade school. And, you know, you can say what you want about Apple and some of their practices, but I think that I stopped and paused a little bit, and it sort of rattled around in my head just sort of the meaning of life and how fragile and how quickly it can go, or in his case, you know, it took a while. But nonetheless, it's one of those things that kind of bothers me.
Yeah, I don't really get wrapped up in celebrity deaths at all. I don't feel them necessarily. I'm not making Facebook posts about how so and so is gone and he'll be missed. I don't know. It's not someone who's close to me, I guess I'm just like, oh, you know, oh, they passed. You know,
yeah,
that's sad, but I'm not gonna, you know, take a moment to do anything about it. So, but you know, Steve Jobs was different, and he's one of those few people that are on that pedestal for me. You know, love him or hate him, a lot of people hated him, a lot of people loved him. He certainly, you know, he wasn't middle of the road.
Yeah.
But he's one of those guys. He's, you know, I'm sure I will feel similarly, if not even more saddened when, despite his damage to the geek community in the last 20 years or so. But George Lucas is another one. It's if once he goes, you know, I'll be like, wow. You know, I'll definitely take notice of that.
Yeah, and it does affect your life. Like, you know, you being an Apple guy, you know, how that sort of changes you, you know, the new products and stuff like that, and how that changes how you do your life will be different from the future, even with whatever he may have laid out. And I think that that's one of the things I was thinking about. That, hey, you know, that's...
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, yeah. I guess you could draw that contrast between, you know, Steve Jobs and a George Lucas, where George Lucas isn't, I could never consume another one of his products again, and you know, my life wouldn't be any different than it is now. But yeah, you know, I do use Apple products, and yeah, they could change how things go, hopefully for the better.
Yeah, hopefully. So I thought to lighten the mood a little bit, you know, we talked Macho Man Randy Savage. I pulled one of my favorite interviews with Macho Man. I think this is a little bit later in his career, because I think he was with the WCW, and he's being interviewed by one of the best in the wrestling business, Mean Gene Okerlund.
One of our own,
and God, we may have even played this clip on the show before.
That's okay, it's worth another
But this is a great, great clip. So Mean Gene talks Macho Man Randy Savage. Listen up.
Pacing the floor. He won his match earlier over Zodiac from the Dungeon of Doom. Now, if Lex Luger happens to win his match a little bit later on against Ming, the Face of Terror from the Dungeon of Doom, that means that Luger and the Macho Man, Randy Savage, will indeed be meeting here at Halloween Havoc, and certainly that stimulates your interest in...
Sidebar, there's also a hip-hop producer who has taken the name Lex Luger.
Oh, I see.
Just a little fun fact for you there. Here we go.
I've got a man that is pacing the floor. He won his match earlier over Zodiac from the Dungeon of Doom. Now, if Lex Luger happens to win his match a little bit later on against Ming, the Face of Terror from the Dungeon of Doom, that means that Luger and the Macho Man, Randy Savage, will indeed be meeting here at Halloween Havoc, and certainly that stimulates your interest in that Luger-Ming match.
One down, one to go. And you know what? I beat the Zodiac, yeah. And we had even a little audience participation, yeah, because I'm wild, yeah. And I'm going to tell you something, Hulk Hogan. I heard what you said about me a few days ago, yeah. And I don't think that you can separate business from friendship. I'm your friend. But if I ever see you in the ring, I can beat you. Don't you know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Randy Savage, I know you
are. Your mustache is crooked.
Your beard is a little sideways, too, but I don't want to get into that. I'm not going to take personal pot shots at you or anybody else. That's not my nature.
Get in line, everybody.
I'm a little better guy than that. I don't mind telling you.
Cool.
I'm a bigger man. Cool. Well, how did we get into this?
That's okay, man.
Very curious.
I'm going to take Lex Luger because I know he's going to beat Ming because I'm going to make sure he does.
Can we just get away from the subject of the Luger potential Randy Savage match? I want to ask you one other question because everywhere I go, people are talking about these two monster trucks that are going to be colliding here a little bit later on. The Giant in the Dungeon of Doom truck and your good friend Hulk Hogan in the Hulkster's monster truck.
My curiosity is killing me just like a cat would be killed by...
Wait a minute, they had monster trucks?
Yeah, they had like...
I thought it was a euphemism at first, or a metaphor, actual monster trucks.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to the Macho Man, I guess.
By the curiosity, yeah, because of the fact, machine versus machine and man versus man, doubled and tripled by the exposure of the WCW Heavyweight Championship belt. Don't you think I have a little bit of interest right there? Friendships, friendships, business is business. Hulk Hogan already... through the line in the sand. I'm just following it up. Yeah.
All right, we're going to be watching very closely.
A participant, and I'm going to be watching too through the video scope. Yeah.
Thank you, the Macho Man, Randy Savage. He is one of a kind. Let's get you back inside, Joe Louis, into the ring.
To the video scope.
I love talking about that video scope. That, I mean, half of that was completely improvisation.
Oh, yeah.
They probably went in and they just said, okay, you got to talk about the match and then the monster trucks.
Your mustache is crooked. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Your bed is a little bit crooked, too, but I'm not going to take personal pot shots.
Oh, don't worry about it. Get in line. Oh, yeah. Hulk Hogan already drew all the line. In the sand. Oh, yeah. There's business, and then there's friends.
Oh, the video scope.
Oh, yeah. Jared, oh, yeah.
Gone too soon.
That is amazing. I mean, if you don't love that... you got problems.
That's brilliance is what that is.
That is absolutely brilliant. You can say what you want about wrestling, but to be able to go and do something that's that compelling, and you have half the people that watch it and take it completely seriously, and you got the other half like us that are laughing their asses off.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it. Enjoying it. Macho Man gone too soon, as Jared said. So, hey, let's move on to music. And, you know, we've gotten a music correspondent. His name is Al.
Yeah.
He's not here, but... he is a Twitter fiend, and he, in the back half of 2011, he posted a ton of best of lists.
He likes to list things up.
He is, I mean, that guy is a maniac.
What is he doing? His top 90 songs from the 90s now?
Right
is that
now.
His current list he's
yeah.
in the middle of?
He's good stuff.
So just at the beginning of.
You need to follow him, Music Snob Al, something like that.
Yeah, it's Music Snob _Al_J.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And he often has some interesting things to say, and it's very thoughtful. He's a very thoughtful music lister, so I appreciate that. Of course, Al did a best of 2011 best songs, and I...
he used to give us CDs of his top 40.
He gave them to me already. So he will get those to you as well. Top 40 songs. He has a few rules that he goes through. He doesn't duplicate artists. So if there's an artist that has two great songs, he will only pick one.
That's good.
And apparently he hates women because there's not a lot of women on this list.
And he's definitely, I think he caters more towards the singer-songwriter types.
Very singer-songwriterish, very alternative.
Roots rocky. Songs with a message.
Yeah, I would say looking at this list, if really there may be three or four songs that might pop up on your standard top 40. Probably only like two songs. Maybe
it's not like he's like totally underground or anything.
No,
but he definitely is you know, a little bit more he likes, alternative, obscura.
He likes deep tracks, too.
Likes the deep tracks.
So I'll just list a few artists off of this, and then I'll actually go through his top five. So we got bands like the Black Keys, the Cars, My Morning Jacket pops up.
I never got into My Morning Jacket. I'm sorry.
Beastie Boys.
I like that.
Beastie Boys pop up at number 31. Foo Fighters pop up at 29.
Which Foo Fighters song?
Foo Fighters song Back and Forth, which is probably not
really
not be one of the my top songs.
That surprises me. Huh. Okay.
REM is there. Thievery Corporation.
That's good stuff.
Social Distortion. He has a lot of older bands. Yeah. Bands that maybe come back.
They put out new stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Social Distortion.
Old bands putting out new stuff. I think that's a Ron Gerber, Boogie Monster Gerber bit.
Yeah.
Arctic Monkeys, they had a new album this year. And
I still got to check that out.
Suck It and See. I didn't like the album that much. One of my favorite bands of the year, the Wombats, pop up. Foster the People, Pumped Up Kicks. That's probably Al's most mainstream song.
I don't know, I just never, that song. I got issues with that song.
I like the song, but it's not my favorite song from Foster the People this year. And then let's start at number, his fifth best song of the year is from Bright Eyes. It's a song called Shell Games. Number four, Ashes and Fire by singer-songwriter Ryan Adams.
You got clips for Bright Eyes. What did you want to bring these clips?
No, Bright Eyes is my clip from my stuff.
Got it.
We'll play that in a minute. The Calamity song by the Decemberists. They've been, you know, pretty popular for the last 5 years or so. Local band Tapes and Tapes, which was supposed to go big after their debut album, their second follow-up album, I didn't like very much, and now they're sort of back with some good music.
This song reminded me that I needed to go, because I have one of their albums, I need to go back and check out their new stuff, because I kind of like them. I think they're good. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, they did a pretty pretty bang-up job with their latest album. And the number one song, according to Al, is by a band that was on hiatus for a long time. A lot of their members did solo projects. They came back together in early 2011. Little band we're calling The Strokes, Jared.
We're calling them The Strokes.
And I'm surprised that Al put Strokes at number one.
It's a good song.
But I like the song.
But number one, I don't know.
I like the album. I like The Strokes. The song, Under the Cover of Darkness.
House, phone back, and it's still cold. What are you waiting for?
I like it, Jared, that you don't have to do the clips, that I've got it figured out now, where I can fade it in and fade it out. I feel like a big man when I can do that.
What are you? I forget what software you're using.
I'm using just a piece of software called, I think it's MP3 Trimmer, and it's got some things where it's...
Is that available in the App Store?
It's not, and I'm using a demo that actually makes you wait a little bit after before you can do things, because it wants you to buy it.
Yeah,
but it works out pretty well.
All right.
So I've got Jared. Do you have any top music you want to talk about this year? Because I've got some stuff. I've got some stuff from Adam.
I was just gonna go through the top five because I listened to it last night. I kind of just gave my own ratings on them. And so it's number five, Shell Games by Bright Eyes. I gave that a 3 on the scope scale.
Okay.
Ashes and Fire by Ryan Adams. I only gave it a 1.5. Ryan Adams is just something I've never been able to get into, and a lot of people like him, but
he did a great cover of Oasis, which I like, but yeah, I'm kind of with you. He doesn't speak to me.
Yeah.
Although this album of all of them is a little bit more accessible.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. Calamity Song by the Decemberists. I gave that a 2.5.
Okay.
Freak Out, Tapes and Tapes, I like that a little more. I gave it a 3. And then Undercover of Darkness, which we just heard, I gave that 3.5.
Nice. That's a good, some good
score. That's pretty good there. I don't have a lot to talk about on music because, admittedly, 2011 is sort of a forgotten year for me when it comes to music. I got a bunch of stuff I intended to go check out, and I just never really got to it.
I laughed at your tweet that said... something to the effect of, I've sort of missed all of 2011 music. Should I even go back? Something like that.
I there are some acts, I mean, I'm I'm going to use Spotify, I think, as a tool to help me kind of go back and check out some of the artists that I want to look at and see if they're worth my my time to go after even further.
Gotcha.
Really, for me, I have two standout albums that were my top of the year. And the first one, we liked it when we reviewed it. And it's the song we just heard from The Strokes.
Yeah.
It's Angles. And then probably my number one album of the year. Just because I really love this band and this album, I just spent a lot of time with it, and we saw them live. I'm gonna go with Foo Fighters and Wasted Night.
They did. I mean, that was a return to form for them.
I think top to bottom, it's a solid album.
Yep.
With really really good stuff. So if you're a Foo Fighters fan, obviously you like it. Maybe
we're a little
maybe
biased because we saw
like, maybe you don't like them because they're they're a major label rock band, but. Whatever. It's for me, it was my favorite album of the year.
You can always count on the Foo Fighters to have three really solid tracks off of just about any album they have. And then everything else is, somewhere between pretty good. And I think this year they were most of those songs on that album were pretty damn good.
Yep.
Adam, looking here at his list, he said he just wanted to mention the band M83, which I like them. I just haven't heard their new album. And maybe The Vaccines, too. For the record, The Vaccines, I was into them even before their album was released in America, Jared. What do you think of that? It didn't hold up for me as much.
The bits I've heard, I'm not huge fans.
Yeah, so. There's a couple songs that I like, but it didn't hold up. He says, lots of okay albums this year, but nothing else mind-blowing. But he said, if you want to fill time, other albums he liked was the new Death Cab for Cutie. Codes and Keys, which actually is one of their more accessible albums, too. A little different. He liked DJ Jewboy, Chrome Kapoor. He really likes
and
DJ.
And he's completely serious about that, which is interesting.
Yeah,
but okay.
It's a strange thing. So I went through my my list of top songs of the year, and I've sort of followed the Al methodology, which what Al does is he is just meticulous on how he rates his music on iTunes. So he'll go through and rate everything, and then that's how he gets his lists. He'll go through and pull all the 5-star or all the 4-star songs. And so I did that, and I actually had quite a list of four-star songs. Not a lot of 5, maybe 1 or 2. So this is in no particular order, but I liked a band called Zonoscope, their song Where I'm Going. I have Rope by the Foo Fighters in there, which, there's so many good songs on that, but Rope for me really is one that I go back to. Foster the People's Helena Beat, which I think was actually the first single off of that album, which I really like. I got this song off of The Current's Free Song of the Day. It's King of Diamonds by Moto Pony, which I really, really like. And Jared's thinking, I don't know any of these people.
I'm just because that's it may have been before I got in, because I didn't start listening to The Current Song of the Day until probably mid-year. So.
Gotcha. I have a Coldplay song in here, Hurts Like Heaven, which I really liked. And going back, talking about that Coldplay album, I like it more now than I did then.
I agree.
I think we're a little hard on it, and Al doesn't agree with that, but too bad. Local band Rogue Valley, Onward and Over. This band is kind of interesting. They released 4 albums within a year's time span, I think, and all those albums corresponded with the seasons. And so their last album that had Onward and Over, I think, is Winter. And it's just this really cool sort of, kind of like Life in a Northern Town type of song, It's very moody, and it really makes me feel the concept of Minnesota winters for some reason. And they're local, and they're decent guys. And a listener and friend of the show, Adam Laszlo, produced music for the lead singer of that band at some point.
Cool.
I've also got Under the Cover of Darkness by The Strokes on my list. Yeah. A band, Telekinesis, Please Ask for Help.
That's on my list of ones to check out.
That's a good
Telekinesis,
one.
Yeah.
I've got TV on the Radio's Will Do. I don't like TV on the Radio. I have not liked them that much. Maybe a song here
I've
there.
I've tried.
But this song I really like.
Okay.
And then my best song, one of my favorite songs of the year, top 5 maybe. You've got a clip for it. It's Bright Eyes, aforementioned. The song is One for You and One for Me. Hit it!
I'm not ready here.
Damn it.
Sorry.
Hit it!
One for the Fuhrer. One for his child bride. One for the wedding. One for the suicide. One for the bunker. One for the broadcast booth. One for me.
go.
Not bad.
Kind of the Alanis Morissette methodology of making music. We'll just sort of list with alternating type things. I don't know. That it's one of those songs that sort of, you know, sonically really gets to me. So I liked it. I like the album overall, too. So there we go.
I got one more album I can't believe I forgot to mention.
Please.
That is on my top of the year. I really enjoyed Jonathan Coulton's Artificial Heart. And I think if you've thought of him as more of the, you know, funny, nerdy side of things, and that's not your cup of tea, this album trends a little bit more towards, I guess, quote-unquote, mainstream alternative type.
Sure.
A lot of different styles. And I don't think everything is great on it, and I think that maybe you could have trimmed two or three songs from it, and it would have been a more solid effort. But overall, I really, really enjoyed it.
If there was a market for more Ben Folds 5-type performers, I mean, that's his pocket right there. Yeah. I mean, he could be a Ben Folds type. He's a very talented musician. Very, very indie pop focused with, you know,
yep,
and guitar and piano. I mean, we downloaded some music for a rock band at the New Year's party, and I mean, probably some of the best songs that we played all night.
Yep, and those were even before this album.
They were
and
before
this album
it, yes.
Definitely, you see the benefits of having a producer, John Flansburgh from They Might Be Giants, on board. Just in the arrangements and the songwriting, and it's definitely a step forward for Mr. Jonathan Coulton. So
good picture.
If he would just come back to Minneapolis with his band and play some songs from that album, I'd be very happy. Unfortunately, he hasn't yet to do that.
Well, he's a bastard.
Jerk face.
Well, let's move on, Jared. We've got
this is going to be a 3-hour show.
Jared, we got NFL playoff games we're bumping up against, so we better get it moving here. So let's talk.
What, they're not going to wait for us?
They're not going to wait for us. Let's talk favorite movies of the year. Now, this is a tricky one.
Yeah,
because we don't see all of them.
We don't see a lot of them.
Yes. And, you know, we may make the effort now a little bit more to see some of the Oscar movies.
There's a lot of stuff that was released in December or, you know, or even in limited release that will start making national releases here in January that I want to see.
I mean, I really want to see The Artist. I want to see The Descendants.
Yep.
I mean, there are things that just, it's tough to get.
I want to see Mission Impossible. I just don't know how I'm going to get to it, though.
It's very difficult.
You know, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
So none of those are on our list, but I do have a couple, handful of things here that made my list, as Adam has stuff and Jared has stuff.
Yeah.
We'll start with Adam. Adam called out the movie 50-50 with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen, the cancer movie, which
I think he just saw that last night, in fact.
I want to see it.
Yeah.
He mentions Drive, which is another movie I really want to see, which I hear is almost like it's two movies in one.
I heard great stuff.
He's got the Pearl Jam 20, anything with Emma Stone, because, you know, Adam is very, very biased with Emma Stone. And he has another movie on his list, which I put down to at least half of the movie, which is Super 8.
It's on my list.
Super 8, we can talk about that briefly. A movie that really gets the tone and feel of late 1970s down.
Yeah.
Pat, it gets the tone and feel of a Spielberg movie of that time period down.
I have a
Even if J.J. Abrams disagrees with that, it's clearly, clearly inspired by those movies.
Definitely.
I think the last third of the movie, where it starts to get a little more into the reveal of the alien and sort of the chase, sort of it breaks down.
Yep, I agree.
But I think that the overall acting in it was terrific, and what's her face? What's the girl?
I can't remember.
Damn it. She was, I thought she was so good that she could be nominated for Best Supporting Actress for that movie. That's how good. And I'm so into her that I don't even know her name.
Fun fact for that film that I learned by listening to the J.J. Abrams interview on Nerdist, the Nerdist podcast. One of the reshoots they had to do, the lead actor's voice had dropped. There is a scene where they're first seeing the Super 8 footage that they shot. And of the train crash, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're watching it in the bedroom, and they're whispering. Well, they're whispering because the lead actor's voice had dropped. And in order to get it to integrate into the film properly, they had to find a way around it.
So what was the solution?
They were whispering.
I get it.
To hide the voice, the fact that his voice had changed.
And no one knew anything.
Nope. That was a good interview. If you don't listen to Nerdist,
I'll go listen.
Go
to
seek
that.
It out.
It's Elle Fanning, by the way.
Yep, there you go. I knew she was like Dakota Fanning's sister. Yep. Or whatever.
And you've got Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights in there.
Always a winner.
Yep, and Joel Courtney, who played the main character, which was a terrific, terrific movie overall. Yep. Also on my list, I've got Moneyball, the Brad Pitt.
I hear good stuff.
Baseball film, which is a very quiet, unassuming type of picture, but I really enjoyed it. And I also put Bridesmaids on there too, which is a different kind of comedy. Obviously, full, the cast is pretty much all female, which you don't get.
Yep.
And they're not being stupid.
It's good. I finally saw it on DVD, liked it. Probably wouldn't put it into my top five, but I definitely, there was some backlash. There was a lot of pro stuff like leading up to it and during the first few weeks of its release. And there was a little bit of backlash where people were like, I just don't get it. I don't know why it's so funny, blah, blah. I think you see that when anything that people liked so much, you're always going to have people who come out and say, nah, it wasn't
that
good.
No, it was.
Tear it down.
I think it was good.
I'm a hater.
It had issues, but I think that it was good and it was smart.
Yep.
And, you know, you had some breakout role by Melissa McCarthy, who, if you've watched any TV, you've seen her before. So, and you know that she's good. And, you know.
She's on every show?
Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig.
Is also a super talent.
I think she, yeah. This proves that she can have a film career if she ever decides to leave SNL.
And so. I look forward to the Triangle Sally film.
We can dream, can't we?
Okay, Jerry, what else is on your list?
Let's see. We already covered Super 8. I think of the superhero genre, I think Captain America was my favorite of the bunch.
Better than Thor?
Better than Thor. I liked Thor, but in Captain America, I just left feeling like, you know what? That was the superior superhero film.
Better than
season.
X-Men First Class.
I think so. X-Men First Class was pretty good, though, too. I liked that quite a bit.
When I go to X-Men First Class, though, and I like the film, there's two things that bother me. One,
modern haircuts in the 60s.
Modern anything in the 60s.
Sure.
When they gave 60s haircuts and looks to some people, but then modern to other. And the fact that they have literally a C-level list of X-Men cast members because they blew them all in the other movies and they just didn't restart it, which they should have done. They should have just restarted it.
Yep.
And then you could have Cyclops or Iceman or whoever in there.
I agree.
They painted themselves into a corner by staying with the continuity.
Yeah, and then they just make up a character too. Or,
that bothered me.
Anyway, let's see here. We talked about that one. A movie that I actually did not see until my plane ride to Florida, what I enjoyed immensely, Crazy Stupid Love. I thought that was a really, really
good. Who's in that?
That's got Steve Carell and what's the redhead lady? And totally blowing out.
Julianne Moore.
Yep.
I really want to see that film.
Adam's favorite, Emma Frost. No, not Emma Frost. Emma Stone.
You got X-Men on the brain.
I got X-Men on the brain. You've got your Ryan Gosling. Just a quality film through and through. Even edited for a plane ride. It was very, very good. But my favorite movie of the year, and may not be down as the best film of the year, but for me, it was
the best that you saw.
It was a great emotional trip and a nice capper to a series of films. And I'm going with Harry Potter.
Never saw it.
Eight.
Harry Potter 8.
I thought it was. I mean, it deviated in good chunks from the book, but it was a very, very fulfilling emotional experience and a nice ending to the series.
Oscar talk for that film, Jared.
In special effects, sure, maybe.
I'm best picture. Like they're thinking
maybe?
It's like a. Not to win Oscar, but to be nominated, sort of like the Lord of the Rings. But
okay, maybe.
Are they doing 5 or 10 films this year?
It depends on it could be five between 5 and 10. It depends on each film has to get like at least 5% of the number one votes.
Okay,
that's how it works.
Okay, thank you. I like your Oscar knowledge, Jared. Yep.
I just read an Entertainment Weekly last night. So.
Well, let's move on. Or if we're done with movies.
Yeah, that's it for me for movies.
Let's move on to TV shows. And we talked about this offline because TV shows are difficult.
Yeah.
Because you don't watch TV shows necessarily by a year. You watch them by season, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you sort
of... So I sort of disregarded anything that was in the spring because we had already sort of recapped that.
Yeah. And I stuck to that a bit, but there's still... I still had to throw a few things on there. We'll start with me, or how about we start with you, Jared?
I really, really enjoyed American Horror Story.
Oh, I forgot to put that on there. Yes, absolutely.
I think that was probably our biggest show we talked about this year.
My, as I described this on a Facebook post, I think that movie or that show was a hot mess in all the right ways.
Yeah.
That's the only way to describe it.
It started out really strong, got really strange, and you weren't sure, is this going anywhere? Is this just a big mess? And then by the end, you're like, wow.
Maybe.
Okay, that wrapped up nice. And the fact that their season two will be a completely different story with a completely different cast. I don't know if I agree with this choice to have some actors on the show playing different roles.
I think
that could
stupid.
Be a little strange.
Yeah.
But I'm the fact that they're treating it as a true anthology is impressive. I like that.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I still love Community an awful lot. I really hope they find a place. They say it's not canceled. I hope it comes back.
I just read that today
point.
That they said it's coming back.
But I think that maybe not a true return to form this
not
fall
as good
season,
as last year.
But I still think they had some really, really quality episodes here and there that I enjoyed immensely.
The Chang moment, and I was talking about this with friends at work, where he's crawling around in the air vents, and he screams, "Oh no, monkey knockout gas!" Like he would know that they're pumping monkey knockout gas into the air vents.
Yeah.
It was a absolutely brilliant moment. And the monkey knockout gas, of course, being called chimpanzees, is... I mean, that might have been the first episode of the season, actually.
Yep.
And it was a humdinger.
And the fact that they've worked in a Beetlejuice joke that took three episodes over multiple seasons to fully play out.
What was that?
The whole idea that if you say Beetlejuice three times, he shows up, and they had him. They've said it like once in three separate episodes or something, and then he like showed up in the background of like the Halloween episode or something.
I didn't see that.
I think that's the joke. I could be wrong. The internet will correct me.
Okay, good.
But it was just that's sort of brilliant. Let's see here. I'm going to briefly talk about Terra Nova. I think that was you bailed out right away. I think a lot of people were disappointed with it, but I think it finished very, very strongly, and I hope it gets another season because I'm really curious where they go with it. The 2-hour finale was a lot of like conflict and a lot of kind of revealing the more of the who's pulling the strings of stuff. And I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. So here's hoping we get more. I might be in the minority on that one. Wow. I want to talk briefly about Downton Abbey. This is a show that so many people were talking about, and I just never... I knew it was on Netflix. I never got around to watching it. I finally had a chance to plow through seasons 1 and 2 over the last couple weeks.
It's not Downtown Abbey, like I say it in my head?
No, it's Downton Abbey.
Okay, and that's how Casey pronounces it on Chuck as well.
Yes.
Which is my name check yesterday.
And it is a fabulous show. I got through season 1, and I was kind of like... This is a really good, solid show. I'm enjoying it, but I'm not quite seeing the sheer brilliance that a lot of people have crowed about. I got to season 2, and apparently I'm the crazy one who absolutely loves season 2. Season 2 picks up with World War I. And
nobody likes season 2?
I've read some negative stuff.
People love
not,
to hate.
That it's not great. And I agree with some of their criticisms, but I think overall, I think season 2 was it really brought me in and... showed me the brilliance of it, and part of it's because they really, really start to delve into the social changes that are brought about by World War I.
Sure.
And then the Christmas episode, while kind of schmaltzy and a little cheesy...
And the fact that everyone got Teddy Ruxpins, I mean, that's a little...
very, very strange, and sort of anachronistic, but we'll go with it. I think the Christmas special was very, very fulfilling and ended nicely and kind of tied up one of the major storyline of the past two seasons, hopefully. They've got some resolution on that. So
I hope.
Anyway, I can recommend that if you like well-done costume dramas. And probably what turned out to be my favorite show of the fall, and I wasn't even planning to watch it initially, but and this is when I had to go through surreptitious means to acquire. I'm going with Showtime's Homeland.
Mm,
oh,
I'm
my goodness.
Reading nothing but good stuff about
how
that
finished in the season finale and set up for the next season is pretty impressive.
You say that's a buyer on DVD if you don't own it?
Sure.
If you get it cheap?
Sure. Buy it or get it for me.
All right.
You just have to figure out how you're going to watch it.
Yeah, that's the tricky part.
But Homeland, I loved it. So that's my TV 2011 for now. I mean, there's more I could talk about more, but...
So I'm looking at our good buddy Adam's list here. He's got Community, especially, or as he writes, especially Alison Brie.
He loves Alison Brie.
She is a hot little pistol. I agree with that.
I'm looking forward to her returning in Mad Men sometime this spring on AMC.
Children's Hospital, that's the Cartoon Network Adult Swim comedy show.
Yeah, I hear
show.
Good stuff about it. I just haven't seeked it out.
He's got that SNL with Emma Stone, which I don't
really?
Even... Here's the thing. I think SNL, the past year, calendar year, has been strong overall.
Yeah.
I think SNL's sort of returned to a bit of...
With the exception of the Anna Faris episode,
Anna
which
Faris
is ridiculously bad.
Terrible.
I mean, don't get her at
they
all.
They always have clunkers. So, yeah. And Sir Charles Barkley happening this weekend could be a bomb as well.
He's newly thin.
He really is.
He's less of a round mound of rebound.
I heard them give him a new nickname. It was like Sir... Oh, I don't remember what it was, but it was something. I don't remember. That's terrible. That's about as bad a podcasting as you get. Adam has somehow mentioned The Wire, which he's rewatching for the second time, which I actually, we bought the season The week before Christmas, because it was on sale, so I now own it.
Yep.
And I gave Al back his season one after having season one for a year and a half, and we're going to freaking watch that.
Okay, it's brilliant. I've watched it. I don't know if I'll give it another go, because I don't really rewatch a lot of shows, but it's very good. Worth your time.
He also has Fringe listed, which I have on my list, so he's got some good stuff.
Gotta get to that. Dang it.
My list, I've got Game of Thrones,
which was as big a
surprise as American Horror Story. For me, but in a completely different way. I've got Friday Night Lights on there. I mean, yeah, that's
solid finish.
Yeah, they finished it beautifully. Exactly pitch perfect. Parks and Rec, we always talk about it, but it's been great.
It's a winner.
This season, to me, probably hasn't been as funny.
Yeah.
But I think it's been just as good in other ways. I just, you know, they've had some serious moments, and the acting has been interesting, and sort of the way they play out the relationship of Leslie and what's the other guy? What's the guy's name?
Ben. Yeah, I just noticed because they had a 2-page ad, I think, in Entertainment Weekly for the new Showtime show. I think it's called House of Lies with Don Cheadle.
I hear
it's good.
I hear it's bad. People are saying it's good, but it's really bad.
I'm curious, but I didn't realize that the guy who plays John Ralphio is in it until I saw the big ad. I'm like, oh, it's John Ralphio.
Love that guy. I've got Fringe on my list, and Fringe hasn't been as good this year compared to last year. They set this year up for some really interesting things that they've decided to take kind of the quiet way, and it hasn't always worked. But I'm hoping when they come back next week that they're going to blow that up, because you know they set it up with parallel worlds, and then they barely shaken the apple tree of that one. So I think that's going to be coming up. And then the other thing I've talked about on this show before, but I'm just going to reiterate, has been...
Your must-watch show, Person of Interest?
Shut up.
Hey!
Parenthood.
Okay.
God, I'm telling you, man, Parenthood, like the first, you know, kind of the fall to winter episodes have been so good. And then I know that I'm getting ahead of myself, but the first new episode of 2012, to me, could be... one of the finest character-driven episodes of a show I've seen in years.
Wow.
There wasn't a lot of trauma. There wasn't, you know, like these type of shows, they tend to have, like, running themes of, you know, oh, she needs to try to get a baby or something like this. It just was a simple road trip show that hit every single note perfectly. And it was a powerhouse example of how good Craig T. Nelson can actually be, which is crazy, but he was...
He
was superb.
The powerhouse of Craig T. Nelson.
And maybe this is because I'm getting older and I've got a kid and shit like that, but I really like that show.
I guess that was going to be my question, is if you're not a parent, is this a show that's going to resonate with you, or...
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Okay. But I just think that it's so well
Because we all
done.
Know... The biggest failing of Up All Night, as far as I'm concerned, is there's too much baby stuff.
There's a lot of things going on in parenthood. It's not just baby focused on Up All Night, which we'll be seeing on Thursday nights.
We will!
Finally, we've got video games. Jared, do you have any video games?
I have nothing to contribute to this. So, nothing new, because the game I played all year, again, is Minecraft.
There you go.
What are you going to do? It's released, I guess I could say, big milestone release for that. The official non-beta 1.0 release was in November. They had a big deal out in Las Vegas called Minecon to release it. And, there hasn't been any really new developments since then, other than the fact that Notch, the guy who created it and was the main developer, has...
left the building.
He's not left the building. He's still with the company, but he's no longer the lead developer on the game. He's turned the reins over to the guy who had been helping him for most of the year, Jens. He's now the lead developer on Minecraft, and we're looking for new stuff in the new year. It'd be exciting.
Excellent.
They're kind of fine-tuning it now. So,
well, Adam and I have some duplicates, but some ones that aren't. He's got Star Wars The Old Republic. I know that he's been playing that like a madman.
Yeah,
lately.
I've been curious to get into that too, but I don't know if I have the time.
He's got Skyrim on there, which I own, but have not cracked the plastic yet. He's got You Don't Know Jack, which I've been reading a lot of good things about, actually. So, you know, that game from the 90s that...
Is it back?
It's back.
Explain this to me.
It's just back. I think that it's Xbox Live, or it might even be just online where you can play it.
Huh.
Adam said, I just started playing Saints Row the Third, but the first hour alone needs to be put this game on the list. I've heard a lot of good things about that game.
Yeah.
And the price on it has gone down, so it might be a good buyer.
Interesting.
The one game
Is that multiplayer then? Or?
I don't know. The game that both Adam and I have on our list, obviously we've talked about, is Batman Arkham City. A fairly quick game for both of us, I think, but terrifically done in a fantastic sequel. Speaking of sequels, the rest of the stuff on my list are all sequels. I've got Portal 2, which is a lot of fun. I never really played Portal 1 that much, so...
I tried. I couldn't figure out how to play it. And
Portal 1?
Stopped, yep.
Portal 2, I think a little bit more intuitive and a lot of fun. I've got Modern Warfare 3 in there. I know it's easy to rip on Modern Warfare, but I played the hell out of that game. Loved it, and I played Battlefield, and to me, it's just a totally different game, and not in a good way. I don't like how Battlefield
feels. 3 is less serious. It's more sort of funny, isn't it?
No, not really.
It's serious?
Yeah, it's okay. Serious.
Because I see videos of fuckers putting their plane into a vertical climb, launching themselves out, switching over to a bazooka to shoot other planes, and then landing back in the plane.
Yeah, people like to do stuff like that, but the game isn't necessarily built for that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then I also put Dance Central 2 on there just because I really like the people at Harmonix, and that's their new game for the year. So I support them. And Dance Central 2, we had a lot of fun with that. I think that if we had a little bit more space, we'd probably play that game a lot, if you want to know the truth, as a party.
Yeah.
Party-type game.
It does take some space, though, yeah.
And we could easily do it right there, as I'm looking over there. Mm-hmm. But we just got to figure out how to project it.
Got to do some room. Got to make some room. Got to get rid of stuff.
So overall, Jared, the year 2011, some good stuff in there, some tragic stuff, some happy, some sad stuff. Are we going to give it a scope score?
Sure, we can give it a
scope score.
3 stars.
3 stars.
Not a bad year.
Pretty typical. Pretty typical for your scope. Your scopers. So I want to thank Jared for putting all the work into that. I want to thank Adam for sending an email. And I want to thank myself for coming up with 3 whole clips.
Yeah.
So, Jared, let's take a break on this monster scope episode. Okay. We'll do a little music, then we'll come back with Under the Scope. Thanks for listening.
It's time to bust a move with Scope Sounds, the Scope Song of the Week. Drop that beat, homie.
Hit it! From thefump.com, this is Ukla the Mock with Go to Bed. Good night, kids.
Put on your pajamas and wash behind your ears. Brush your teeth and scrub your face. I'm running all around the place. It's time for all the girls and boys to put away their clothes and toys and go to bed. Go to bed, 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 go to bed. I know what you're thinking, you want to jump on the bed. I think you better settle down and mind your P's and Q's instead. Cause little kids start jumping, then pretty soon they don't care. They're jumping, 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 jumping. Go to bed, 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 go to bed. Jump, jump, go to bed, 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 go to bed. Jump, 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 jump. I'm on my knees, I'm saying pretty please, please go to please go to go to bed, 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 jump, jump, go to bed, 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 jump, 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 go to bed, 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 go to bed. Go to bed, go to bed, go to bed, bed, bed.
Go to bed, bed, go to bed, bed.
Go to bed, 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 bed,
bed, bed. Broadcasting from high atop the IDS, it's The Scope.
Under the Scope.
And we are back.
Yay!
With Under the Scope. There's two of us here. That means one of us has to do the news.
I believe I have drawn the short straw this week, and I will be reading the news.
You always do such a nice job on it, I'm excited about it. It's a nice change from the way Adam does, which he does a great job.
I'm going paperless. I have it all pulled up on my screen, since I have a computer that's not going to crash and burn if I am not watching the faders immediately.
That's why I didn't feel bad about sending you just links.
Yep, that's perfect. So, lead story, Shane. Man calls 911 after gluing plastic cups to head. A man who accidentally glued 5 plastic cups to his head put in a desperate call to 911 seeking medical attention.
Okay, so let's pause it right there.
Yes. What sort of configuration is this going to be?
Number one, how do you accidentally glue five cups to your head? I could see accidentally gluing one to your head. Maybe two if you were trying to take it off.
I'm thinking the first one off. I don't know. Somehow he got to be one of those cup stacker type, you know, and he had to have been like in mid unstack, and then somehow the glue in his pocket, he must have tripped over, I don't know, some marbles on the floor or something, and it rolled, and the glue, I don't even know.
I don't want to doubt your logic, but that just really seems like a really tricky situation to make
it happen. One of those things that you wouldn't believe it until it happens.
Yeah, well, it must have happened.
Truth is stranger than fiction.
I have no idea where that character is coming from.
Shane, but that's just one of the more ridiculous non-emergency calls being highlighted in the Shields region of England. Although you've answered your question
already. Yeah,
it's England.
Yeah. They're probably looking for a sonic screwdriver or a cosmic screwdriver or whatever it is.
Sonic screwdriver. You had it right the first time. Okay. Hey, the Shields Gazette has posted a list of their more unusual Northeast Ambulance Services calls to the region. Has recently experienced the glued cups to the head, takes the ribbon, but some of the other contenders are. You ready for this?
Takes the ribbon.
One woman dialed 999 because she had the hiccups.
That must be 911, the equivalent.
Yeah, it's an interesting because they Americanized the first part and then... And now it's British.
It's lazy.
A rabbit owner called because her pet had a sore leg. Oh, so sad.
So far, these are not as good as head.
No, not even
glue
close.
To the cup action.
A caller phoned in because a contact lens had become stuck in his eye.
Mm.
It's also worth noting that, unlike in America, but perhaps to the delight of Herman Cain, British emergency calls are placed to 999. Blah, blah, blah. I don't think we need to cover
Robin
any more
Ophelia
of this story.
Ophelia quivers.
All right. Ophelia. Do we want to talk DVDs? Do you want to talk... cops, or do you want to talk a special event coming up at the Pittsburgh Zoo? Which one do you want?
Let's go to the DVD one.
Going to the DVDs.
That seems more...
Warner Brothers to impose a 56-day delay on DVD rentals. I read about this earlier this week, and I'm kind of annoyed by
it. Tell me about this, then.
Prepare to have your patients tested if you prefer to rent DVDs rather than buy them. In a precedent, other major movie studios are likely to follow. Warner Brothers is poised to announce that its latest DVD releases won't be made available to rental outlets until nearly 2 months after the discs can be bought in homes or bought in stores and websites. A person familiar with the matter explained the new rules to the Associated Press on Friday. The person who spoke on the condition of anonymity, blah, blah, blah. Okay, they're being announced at things. Where's the meat of it? Ah, here we go. The new restrictions will double a 28-day delay on DVD rentals that Warner Brothers reached with Netflix video subscription service 2 years ago. After that breakthrough, several other movie studios adopted similar moratoriums, although many DVD releases still remain available to rent on the same day they go on sale in stores. The increased wait for DVD rentals exposes the competitive tensions that are shaking up home entertainment. In the past 7 years, movie studios have seen U.S. sales of DVDs and Blu-ray discs fall by a third. Netflix's growing popularity during the past decade helped put a major dent in one of the movie studio's biggest moneymakers because its services enable people to watch as many mail-delivered discs as they want flat monthly fee.
Is that how Netflix works?
It could be that they're making shitty movies and charging too much for them. That might have part of the problem.
And it could be that we're in a huge recession.
Yeah.
And people also realize that you don't need to have 600 DVDs like I have that I don't watch.
Yeah. It's pretty sad here. What do we got?
So how do you feel about that, by the way?
We don't need to cover any more of this. It's going to affect Redbox and Netflix and Blockbuster, if you still have one.
Can Redbox still go buy them themselves, then? Because
I think
listener Ann said that they do that from time to time.
Maybe. And I know that there was a side story for Netflix where HBO was going to stop selling their discs directly to Netflix.
Yeah.
But Netflix says we'll
buy it ourselves.
Buy them anyway. And that's not going to have any effect on that. But... It's sort of annoying, but at the same time, I rarely am grabbing discs from Netflix right when they're supposedly released anyway. I'm so far behind that I don't necessarily notice. Half the time, I'll put them in my queue, and then I'll forget they're there, and then they'll eventually show up on the instant side of it, and I'll be like, oh, cool, I'll just watch it here.
I think that one of the side effects, and this is just me taking a stab at this logic, but you can agree with me or disagree, but one of the things that's come out of Netflix is that the immediacy that people want to see new releases has sort of gone away in general.
Sure.
People don't need to see Moneyball the day it comes out because they have access to all sorts of other things. And I think that really pisses off the movie studios. And so that's another way they're fighting it. I kind of feel like the movie studios deserve to get their just desserts out of their stuff. But, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum. You know, is the Pandora out of the box? You know, it's just... people view and consume media differently, And I just don't know how movie studios are going to be able to compete against that.
They've tried to make the argument that the fact that you can get DVDs mailed to your house or just stream them from your computer, it takes such little effort compared to having to physically go to a place.
Sure.
That is, you know, causing people not to buy DVDs anymore. And I guess that's the laziness excuse. Yeah. But I just think your product isn't maybe as good as people once thought, or people aren't buying DVDs specifically of movies they already own on DVD for their Blu-ray player because the quality difference isn't as noticeable, either because they don't have a big enough TV to notice it, or they're not hooked up right to notice the difference.
Don't you think, though, Jared, it could be that people have realized that through Netflix, because they can consume so many movies,
yeah,
that they realize that they don't have the time or the desire to watch films over and over again.
It's true.
So why own it when you don't need to? Because there's always going to be something else that you can watch that takes its place.
Yep. You can always just pop it on your Netflix queue, shoot it to the top, and it'll be there, you know, three or four days later.
That's what I think. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the understanding that I've had.
And I don't think that delaying the movie is going to have any effect on that.
Probably not.
Very little, in fact.
Probably not. So we'll see how that goes. I think that 2012... if we're looking forward, will be a very interesting year for media and entertainment and how it's distributed. I think that with the rumors of the Apple TV, I think with the anger with movie studios versus Netflix and Redbox and movie studios trying to get their own streaming system going up with that. I don't know what it's called, but it's sort of been a failure right now.
Yeah,
with that kind of that cloud service. I think that this is going to be really interesting. And with legislation trying to go against piracy as well, it could be a landmark year for media and how we consume it as consumers.
I think at some point you're going to see there's going to be a day and date on demand or streaming release of a major motion picture along with its theatrical release. They've teased about it in the past, and you know, there was Tower Heist was supposed to have it, and then the theater owners boycotted it, and they said, we won't run your movie in the theaters if you do this, and so they backed off of that. But at some point, it's going to happen. At some point, movies will be released theatrically, but you'll also be able to get them through other outlets.
That starts happening, I think that will signal the end of movie theaters in the mass quantities that they have.
Yeah,
I think it will. I mean, why would you ever go? Especially if the pricing is...
I'm not saying it's going to happen this year, but it's going to happen at some point.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. Shane, cop issues speeding ticket, asks driver for a date, and she sues him. What's up with that?
That might be sounds like very poor judgment.
Yeah.
On the Polizei, the federales.
We're going to bring it back here to nearby Upper Midwest. A Chicago police officer allegedly turned a $132 speeding ticket into a pickup opportunity when he later tracked down the female driver and asked her out, saying the least he could do for the money he cost her was to treat her to dinner. According to a lawsuit, the woman filed in federal court.
Wow. That's bad judgment all the way around.
Evangelina Paredes filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Chicago accusing police officer Chris Collins of violating her privacy, according to the Associated Press. She alleges that after she was ticketed on October 22nd, Collins searched for her address in the motor vehicle database and left a handwritten note on the windshield of her car, which was parked outside her apartment in the Chicago suburb of Stickney. Never heard of it. Asking her on a date.
Good to leave that physical evidence, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, the guy probably is thinking, you know, very innocently, maybe he got wrong signals. I don't know. Or maybe he's crazy, but that's all sorts of trouble there.
Yeah, it's sort of an abuse of power there. In the note, a copy of which appeared was included in the court documents and was obtained by the Associated Press, the 27-year-old police officer tried to woo the female driver with humor and a seemingly heartfelt plea. It goes on to quote the note here. It's Chris, that ugly, bald, Stickney cop who gave you that ticket.
Ew.
I know this may seem crazy, and you're probably right, but truth is, I have not stopped thinking about you since...
I gave you that $130 ticket.
I don't expect a girl as attractive as you to even go for a guy like me, but I'm taking a shot anyways. It did cost you $132. Least I can do is buy you dinner, the note reportedly read.
That seems sweet. And also stupid.
Yeah. And there's more stuff there, but we don't need to follow.
Wow.
I'm going to close it up, Shane, with one, because Valentine's Day is coming up.
It is.
And Pittsburgh Zoo,
right around the corner.
The Pittsburgh Zoo has a special adults-only event coming up.
Pittsburgh
Zoo is hosting a Valentine's Day dinner that promises to review, quote, the intimate secrets of exotic animal mating, unquote.
Mm.
It sounds like the ideal romantic date, as the zoo's website explains. You ready for this?
Oh, my.
Join us for dinner, cocktails, and an adults-only preview by...
Yeah, and cocks and tails.
By Henry Cobrick... I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Wow, Jared. Your romantic voice failed you.
It's Keck Pricks
Smith.
I think it's like
Henry Smith.
There's a Z in there. I don't even know. Henry, who will reveal the intimate secrets of exotic animal mating, from the most violent mating battles to the subtlest courting rituals, learn how the animals of land, sea, and air find love in the wild.
You're missing sexy music in the background.
I know. Totally. It's a little like the lyrics to Cole Porter's classic song, Let's Do It, come to life. And that's why the birds do it, bees do it, even educated fleas do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
Wow.
And though love itself may not cost a thing, tickets to see these lavicious lions are $75. The amorous animalistic display. Lots of alliteration.
Oh, boy. It's hard to say it, man.
Also comes fast on the heels or hooves of the news that animals are far better at detecting human intent than previously thought. Still, one needn't carry out advanced zoological research or possess an animal's native intuition to deduce the intentions of couples showing up on Valentine's Day to study animal mating routines up close.
That sounds like watching the stuff on the Animal Channel that you never want to see, like the most uncomfortable things.
Yeah.
Violent lion sex.
Yeah. I tell you what, I'm getting a couple plane tickets to Pittsburgh and taking my lady over to the animal screw.
Well, you might be flying home as a single man, if that's the case.
Johnny, that is your news on episode 118 of The Scope.
Not a bad read. Well, no reviews today.
What? Oh, I gotta get in there anyway.
Sorry. So let's just do coming soon. Whoa.
Timed it with the music change.
I liked it. Well, I will be reading coming soon since Adam is still unavailable. He has not shown up in the middle of the show. We've got a lot of stuff coming up for music. Actually, not really, but we're sort of in that quiet time.
Yeah, I can imagine there's a lot being released.
But more music than anything else. Let's see. January 10th, we get the latest from the band Snow Patrol. Fallen Empires is the name of that album. I hear that they've got a track already released on Grey's Anatomy, and people are really talking about it.
I should pull that up on Spotify.
That's about it on January 10th. January 17th, a little bit more. We've got new releases from Annie DeFranco, or Ani DeFranco, depending upon what part of the country you live in. Guided by Voices. Howler, which I think is a band that is featured in...
It's all werewolves, right?
Yes, nothing but feral animals.
So.
Howler mentioned in Al's Top Music of the Year, I think. Modern English, the band that gave us I'll Stop the World and Melt With You, is back with
old some bands releasing new stuff.
Ricochet Days.
Wow.
And then finally, the Big Pink with Future This.
Big Pink.
I like the Big Pink. They had a good album from 2010.
That sounds like something to do with Vajayjay.
It does. Really does.
Or
movies, January 13th. We're past, Jared. We are past Oscar time, so all these movies are...
This is the post-Oscar era.
I guess. We've got... the movie that everyone's been clamoring for.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been saying this for years.
Probably.
You want to see a movie with Queen Latifah.
Yes.
And a newly plastic surgeon, Dolly Parton.
Coming
together in a Glee-like movie called Joyful Noise.
This sounds like a dream come true, literally.
I know.
And that dream is a nightmare.
January 13th, you will get to experience that nightmare/dream. Also, Contraband, which, is that a Mark Wahlberg movie?
I think so, yeah.
January 20th brings us Underworld Awakening. I think that is the fourth Underworld movie. But the
Return of Kate Beckinsale.
The third of Kate Beckinsale. We've got Haywire.
That looks kind of interesting.
And we've got the George Lucas-produced movie Red Tails. Okay. Featuring, is it the Tuskegee Airmen?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Fighter pilots, the African-American fighter pilots.
He just
pilots.
Produced it, though, right?
He didn't direct it or write it. Speaking of markets are declining, we've got some DVDs coming out as well.
Wow. We don't have to wait 58 days to buy them, thankfully.
Boardwalk Empire comes out on DVD, as does Moneyball, the aforementioned. What's Your Number, which I think is one of the worst reviewed movies of the year. I think that's Anna Faris, as a matter of fact.
Ooh, bummer. And then sorry, Ms. Faris.
Here's an interesting one.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe Series 2, Season 1. After the original G.I. Joe cartoon finished, Deke took over and produced it for a couple of years with a lower budget and a lot of different voice actors. Well,
I don't remember these cartoons.
It was late 80s or early 90s.
Why would I be watching them?
I was honest.
A hun pussy.
Sure you are. That might be the best joke of the day. And I got to tell you, with my collector's mindset that G.I. Joe Series 2 might be on my shelves for me to never watch.
Wow.
January 17th brings us Abduction, And another terribly reviewed movie, Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star.
I don't know that one. I think you're making these up.
I'm not. Video games. Very,
that was me just doing a little Adam for you.
Very, very, very grim time in video games, yes. Jared. Week of January 8th brings us Choplifter HD.
Choplifter?
For the PS,
that's a classic!
For the PS3 and Xbox 360.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay.
And then week of January 15th, I've got written down in my notes, nothing of interest.
Nothing of interest. That doesn't mean there isn't anything. It is just not interesting.
So I would say buy games from 2011. Maybe Saints Row.
Yeah. Why not?
Maybe Saints Row. Maybe Skyrim. That'll keep you busy.
Ooh, probably find a good deal.
I think so. But by the way, Jared, that's it.
That is it?
That is it.
Wow. Under the scope.
Well, the back end of the show is awfully light because you know what, Shane?
I don't have any comments.
No comments. We've lost all our listeners. It's over.
Nobody commented on episode 117, and it was over a month ago anyway, so, yeah. You know. Timely stuff like that. So, hey, if you want to write in a comment, though, for this show, you can comment on the blog. You can write us an email at comments@thescopeshow.com. Actually, we did get an email. I apologize. Yes. We got an email from listener Cyrus.
I like that Cyrus character.
From Albuquerque, and he was happy. I'm gonna pull up the email.
This is a recent email, too, so it's current.
Where is it? There it is. Hello, Scope hosts and potential guests. I love the show and was delighted to hear you play some Skrillex on the last episode. I enjoy some good dubstep and came across a really cool mix. I figured a few of you may appreciate it, having a gaming background that you do. So I hope you enjoy it and keep up the great show. And what he sent in was, and I'm not going to play it here, but it is a dubstep remix of music from Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. I listened to it last night, and it is pretty damn cool. So, yeah.
I will give that a listen.
Give
it
a listen. And, seek it out, all you people. I think I've seen a video for it on YouTube as well, so it's available. Just look for it. Dubstep Ocarina of Time. And enjoy.
Thank you, Cyrus.
You can call our voicemail line at 612-21-SCOPE. That's 612-217-2673. Operators are standing by.
I like it.
You can also join our Facebook fan page or follow us on Twitter. All of those links are at our website at thescopeshow.com. Shane?
There we are.
I'll just mention again, donations, $5 a month gets you sponsorship of an episode and a special mention at the top. And if you're making a purchase at Amazon, please consider clicking through the link that is on our website. A bunch of you did that over the holiday season, so we appreciate that.
Probably a lot from me and a lot from Adam and a lot from you and maybe a few of our listeners as well.
Yeah, so keep that up. It helps, helps us do special things in the new year. So
there we are.
That's all I got.
Nice. So I think that's it. You know, no plugs, no Adam.
I don't technically have a plug to make yet because it is still not beneficially announced. So there.
Okay, well, we'll
I have no band appearances to talk about yet. Nothing.
Hopefully
nothing
when we do our next show in 8 weeks, it'll be official.
I'm sure it will be.
So let's wrap this bitch up.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Episode 118 in the can. We'll be back soon with more Scope goodness from our mouth to your ears. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com or leave a voicemail message by dialing
612-21-SCOPE. 612-217-2673.
Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying, Belle nuit. Tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.